Hello and welcome to Failing Up. This is Tim Marr coming to you on this first weekend of August, or the second weekend of August, I believe, in 2021. Last weekend of the Olympics, though. Olympics in Tokyo. Interesting Olympics. Olympics without an audience for the most part, but again, usual drama and excitement and a lot of activities around the Olympics, even though they were postponed. So it'll be strange because in 6 months we'll be having the Winter Olympics. Thank you, Jungle Jim, for that wonderful, wonderful musical introduction. What a great talent he is, Jungle Jim. Always coming up and composing that wonderful introduction to kick us off in the show. That's right. Here I am recording from the basement, the echoey basement, located on the shores of the Seneca River, leading up to the mighty Lake Ontario. Just up there about a week ago, that feeds into the St. Lawrence Seaway River, which goes all the way out into the Atlantic Ocean, way up north. If you take a left, you go on over to the beautiful city of Toronto, wonderful city of Toronto, or you can even cruise on over to Niagara Falls, the last of the Great Lakes moving east, as the Great Lakes are actually considered kind of like a river as they flow into each other and then eventually lead out into the ocean. But the Seneca River here, on the banks of the Seneca River, which lead into the Oswego River, which is the only river, one of two rivers, I believe, in the continental United States that flows north. Hope you're having a great summer thus far. Here we are in August in the midst of the dog days of summer. This is a time of year in the Northeast when many people say, well, summer's over. You know, July's over. Autumn's in the air. Well, summer's not over. There's a lot of summer left, even though football camps are opening up and some students are back into school. And excuse me. And we're looking at COVID and getting back to a sense of normal and taking care of each other. But still a lot of summer left here in the world, I think. You know, in the world. That's right. So, again, on a nice, warm summer Sunday, I'm upload recording this podcast and taking a look at all that's occurred on this week and the week. You know, I had an interesting situation. I was just in the parking lot of the local, you know, super grocery store. Not just a grocery store, but if you go in there, it's a grocery store and it's a restaurant and, of course, it's a pharmacy, and you can do just about anything there. You know, you can get your tires changed. And as I was driving through the parking lot, this other vehicle had not stopped, and I kept going. And she locked up her brakes right in front of me, about inches from my bumper, screamed out her window, "What the hell are you doing?" And I calmly replied, "I'm driving properly, and you're not." She goes, "Well, I stopped," and I pointed down, and I said, "Well, had you stopped, your front tires would not be across that white line." And I assumed she wanted to have a conversation, but she said she was in a hurry. And I said, "You know, I did stop, and I wanted to explain the proper four-way stopping procedures to her," in which she did not appreciate at all, and informed me that she was in a hurry to get the heck out of the way. And I wished her a fine day. I said, "Have a great day." You know, road rage is out there, I guess, even in the, you know, everybody's got to get someplace in a hurry. They got to get through that drive-thru and shove that food in and get that food out quick and make sure it doesn't stick on their body so they end up with a little extra something around the waist so the jeans don't fit like they used to and all those kinds of things. We're in such a freaking hurry, man. Wow. I guess we've been locked up so long. We're in a hurry. We don't know where we're in a hurry to go. You know, I'm in a hurry to get there. What is there? You know, what is there? But it dawned on me as I responded that way, as I would respond when I was an adolescent, you know, that here I am, 62 years old, and I still feel like I'm 13, you know? And I remember looking back and looking at my parents and when I was 10 and 11, my grandparents passed away young, or even, you know, I was older, my grandmother, and thinking, you know, when they were my age in their 60s, and I'm thinking, you know, they had it, they were so mature, they would, you know, they would let you know, you know, that's really not how you're supposed to act. That's not how you're supposed to do things. You know, it seemed like their lives were so, solid and so under control and they had such history. And here I am, 62 years old, and I feel like I'm 13. You know, I feel like I still feel as if I'm an adolescent. And I still respond as if I'm an adolescent. In some ways, I say, well, why wouldn't I? You know, in some ways, well, that's not how we're supposed to respond. I say, well, that's how I feel I should respond. I mean, if somebody almost runs me down, why wouldn't I have a conversation? My son's in the car. And he's going, Dad, what are you doing? I said, I'm having a conversation. I'm having a conversation. You can't have a conversation with that person. I said, why? They opened up the window and started talking. Why wouldn't I have a conversation with them? But it just dawned on me how, you know, in the years of adolescence, me, a child growing up in the 60s and the 70s, you know, what mattered when I was 13, you know, were my bike tires pumped? Were, you know, was I going to get caught egging a car? You know, we're going to sleep out that night. All the kinds of things that, you know, I was at a pimple. All the things that seemed so traumatic then, and the conversations you would have. They say that the friends you have when you are 13 years old, the close friends you have, and it could be one or it could be, you know, 10, those will be the closest friendships you ever have in your life during that period. And later on in life, you'll have friends. But then they're just kind of the truest friendships because all the other trappings around friendship aren't there in many ways. You know, they're not friendships based on socioeconomic status. They're not friendships based on title. They're not friendships based on anything except for the fact that you're with a small group or a guy or a girl, you know, your best friend, and you're sharing something. You know, you're sharing an interest or you're sharing a fear. Maybe you got bullied together. Maybe maybe you, you know, had the same hobbies. Maybe you just happen to live next door and you have the same fears. Maybe you're afraid of the same whatever. But that bond is very honest and very basic. And, you know, I ran into one of my old friends from my youth about a year ago. I ran into one this 2 weeks ago. We went to kindergarten together, and I ran into another guy about a year ago. And we grew up together in the same small neighborhood. And it immediately goes back to that time. You know, you see those guys, and you haven't seen them maybe in years. And you see those guys, and you go right back to that time, that period. When good, you know, when mischief was mischief, and things were so basic, you know, jumping a bike over a jump or going down a hill really quickly and the dangers, you know, and being a little more reckless. It was all taking a chance, but you did it together or daring someone to do something, but always being there at the end to say, you know, it's going to be okay. And that kind of came back. But I was thinking, you know, as I now am an aged adolescent, you know, essentially an aged adolescent, and I look at the world as an aged adolescent, sometimes I feel like I faked it. You know, I feel like I faked being in the professional world. You know, I had an opportunity to have positions at, you know, some universities and travel the world and meet some really interesting and, you know, successful people in all industry, really. And I would sit in these meetings or interactions with these folks, and I'd say to myself, am I faking it? I mean, do they really know that there might be a 13-year-old in the room? And then I'm wondering, are they faking it too? Is everybody, you know, what, as we learned in The Second City when we were developing characters, what is everybody's subtext? What really is going on underneath when you, meet somebody or you're in a meeting with somebody? These are what a lot of really great communication experts look at, nonverbal communication. When you even research a character, what's really going on there? You know, what is that individual? What's their subtext? What's making them tick when they're in the meeting? You know, what are they thinking? You know, how long do they want that thing to go? How many buttons can you push? And when can you time what you're going to say that's going to kind of throw the meeting off and change the status of a meeting? Change the status of a relationship in a way that you want it to change. And in some ways, that's where becoming an adolescent as an adult is helpful, because everybody is expecting a certain type of response or a certain type of behavior to a situation. And when all of a sudden you someone called an icebreaker, but you're able to change the direction just by a comment or a joke or something, It brings the focus, which is big in improv, it brings the focus back on you and allows you to get your point across. I mean, Lincoln was known, Abraham Lincoln was known for being a storyteller and a jokester, and how he cleverly and used that mechanism, those mechanisms to get his points across. And it's, you know, it's really interesting how John F. Kennedy in press conferences used humor. You saw Barack Obama use a lot of humor as well. And keeping that adolescence, adding on to that adolescence, you know. And, you know, it's funny because you think about how that can be effective in how we want to communicate or how we want to be heard, but also how we want to get our points across, whether it's in a meeting or organization or a situation, how we're trying to move forward our perspective, but at the same time, be cognizant of the information. So who really are those folks and what do they really want? You know, when I was at the Maxwell School, we looked at negotiation, we always looked at the BATNA, best alternative to negotiation. What's the real alternative to negotiation? How far can you break away and push it from what the other parties really are striving for and find out what is their best alternative? What are they really going to settle with? And that's where the chess match comes back and forth, and that's where the listening comes back and forth. That's where sometimes that adolescence comes back and forth, where you're willing to kind of push the teacher. You know, you're willing to take that chance and push the teacher and see what direction the teacher's going to go, or when's the teacher going to put their foot down and say, okay, that's just not how we operate in this class, Mr. Marr. Who knows? But hey, you know, anyway, being an aging adolescent, you know, all the things that were funny when I was a younger adolescent, things like pulling my finger or things like, you know, having somebody sit on something or all those, you know, those pranks that you would laugh for hours about, you know, if somebody happened to stand up in class and break wind, you know, we call it farting back in the day, cut a real nice juicy one, back in the day, you'd laugh for hours, you know, and, we're talking about, you know, trying to build up your muscles. So you know, curls for the girls in my case. But, you know, you'd get out there and try to do all that stuff. And now here I am, you know, and I meet these guys who I haven't seen, you know, since we were younger, but I haven't seen in years. And, you know, we had this bond at 13 and, you know, we're talking about things like, have you had a colonoscopy yet? Woo. What about that prep? You know, the colonoscopy is not bad, but the prep is a killer. I got to tell you, man, the prep is a killer, you know. 45 years earlier, we were trying to get beers out of Mr. Moan's fridge. Now all of a sudden, oh my God, the prep is a killer. I thought I was going to die. Ugh, the actual act's not bad, but I'll tell you, the night before is pure hell. Here I am, you know, talking with the guys who 45 years ago, we were trying to see, you know, if so-and-so had a crush on us or, you know, how do you, who has a Playboy magazine? Oh my God, the prep is a killer. Crazy stuff, you know, and then you have, you know, you're wondering about, as you become this aging adolescent, people are talking about retirement. Hey, you going to retire? When are you going to retire? You know, life is a cycle, you know, first of all, when you're younger, it's, you know, what are you going to get through class? You know, when are you going to get on to this 11th grade? What are you going to do after high school? You know, what type of career are you going to have? I told my sons, I would never give my sons the advice, which back in my era was the advice, was, you know, go out, get yourself something, and get a pension. I pray that my sons pursue their passion and not the price tag. And I was thinking that, because it caused much conflict in me, not that I already don't have some in my head, but then I was thinking, you know, get through the 5th grade, get through the 10th grade, get through high school. Do you go to college? Get through college. How does that work out? Do you stretch it out like I did for a lifetime? And then, yeah, but now it's when are you going to retire? You know, Tim, when are you going to settle down? That was always the question. When are you going to settle down? When are you going to grow up and settle down? You know, that's what people used to say. When in the world are you going to grow up and settle down? Got to get a drink here. Diet caffeine, my last advice. And now the question is, so when are you going to retire? And my response is, I don't know. And inside I say to myself, I don't want to retire. I don't ever want to retire. I mean, even if I stop doing what I'm doing, you know, and I've been, you know, really blessed in my lifetime where I've experienced so many things in my, you know, it's been a stressful journey at times, but it's been a rewarding journey. You know, working in the field that I've been in and working in, you know, being able to pursue my creative interests, my educational interests, and then professional interests to support all those and at the same time have a wonderful family. But when are you going to retire? It's just the next step, man. I don't think I'm ever going to retire. I think it's just the next step, the next phase. You know, just like when are you going to stop, you know, screwing around and trying to, you know, be an actor and settle in? You know, when are you going to go back to school? And I will when I want. I'll do it when I want, and I did. So when are you going to retire? I don't think I ever am. I may stop doing what I'm doing and have been doing for a long time, you know, working in the areas of, you know, philanthropy and fundraising and to, you know, pay the bills and focus more on my creative pieces. But I don't want to do that, man. I mean, there's a great book called How Did Starbucks Change My Life? And the author of the book talks about that, how he reinvented himself and really understood a lot of the values and the meanings to him. I'm in the same boat, man. I'm just a man. I'm like a filter. You know, I view life as like a filter, and you're constantly, things are getting poured into your filter. Not thinking of a colonoscopy in this analogy, but things are getting poured into your filter. And as your filter, you know, some things stay and some things go, and you're constantly pouring things in there, you know. And I just look at it as the net. I look at everything as building, and I've been really fortunate where everything has built. You know, one's experience has led to another experience and another experience. And at times people even wanted to compensate me for those experiences. But I think if, you know, it's all building, and it's, you know, unless you're an athlete in some ways, you can still be on the senior circuit. There's nothing too late to do anything. So I just don't see retirement as an option. And I have a fear of retirement. I have a really healthy fear of it because I remember in my 20s, and even I think back to my younger years, you know, my grandfather, my grandpa Hines was like my hero. He was a fireman. You know, I remember he had a great retirement. He had a set day. He got up in the morning, made a wonderful breakfast, went into the city, spent the morning with his cronies and came back to their grandparents' house and spent the afternoon and went to bed. You know, he died at 72 back in the late 60s. He would have lived longer today, you know, clogged arteries. He was sort of the sedentary life after he got out of the fire department. I'm sure, you know, a lot of it was, you know, his lifestyle then. He wasn't as active, but I don't know how active he was. But at least he, you know, had a mission. And I look at other people I see who have retired, but they take up new careers. They take up new. So you never really retire. You just kind of morph into something else. And that's how that's what I plan on doing. And whether that is, you know, I always thought it would be really rewarding. I remember when I was in my 20s and they still pumped gas in upstate New York back then. I think they still do it in New Jersey. They do it at a couple stations because you have to. Because some people can't pump their own gas. And I remember seeing this guy, and he was probably in his early 70s, pumping gas. Happiest guy in the world, talking with everybody, having a conversation. And I thought to myself, that's the guy I want to be when I'm right around there. I want to be a guy who's either working in the grocery store, shooting the breeze with everybody all day, working at the sample counter, pumping gas. That's what I want to do. You know, I don't ever want to get out of the people business. I don't ever want to get out. I'm not a spectator, you know. I had a chance in my 20s to do a lot of that, probably too much of it. But I'm afraid that if I retire, I'll die. And I really am. And I think, you know, I've seen people close to me retire and they died. So it's probably not a healthy psychological response to retirement, but it's the way I think about it, you know. And I think being an older dude with younger boys helps me to maintain that. But I'm always, I just can't fathom it as people ask, you know, when are you going to retire? And the prep, oh my God, the prep is hell. No kidding, the prep is hell. I was thinking about marriage the other day. You know, I wonder, here's what I think. If people get married, if they live in separate homes but are neighbors, I think the divorce rate would go down. Because I think one of the issues with marriage, or if you get a big house, but everybody can get a big house, is that, you know, when you get married, you see things you don't want to see. You know, like, you know, is the seat being put down or up? You know, is the air freshener being used? What picture's getting hung where? But if you were neighbors, really close neighbors, and you visited each other whenever you wanted, and you had sleepovers and all that kind of stuff. But yet, you know, one person had their own decor and their own bathroom, and the other person had their own decor and their own bathroom, and the kids had bedrooms in both houses and could stay either way. I think that would alleviate a lot of stress in a relationship, because, you know, hey, you don't, you know, there's my man cave is my home. So that's why I'm not a counselor of any type by any ways. But that is how, you know, I've realized that people look at, like, I go through the drive-ins now and I get the senior citizens discount, you know, or people call me sir. People in their 40s, mid-40s, call me sir. Let me tell you, it's not bad when people in their teens or their 20s call you sir. But when somebody in their mid-40s looks at you like that, you're thinking, wow, I should probably be functioning a little different on a mental level in an emotional capacity than I am. I shouldn't be thinking like an adolescent when somebody in their 40s is referring to me as sir. I had a guy one time on a bus offer me a seat, and I said, screw you. That's just not being a nice guy. But it's really interesting as we age, you know, I don't know what the fears are as we age, or losing mobility or you know, health. But a lot of that is there when you're younger. I was thinking this the other day, too. When you're younger, you know, when you're in your 20s, most of us, me at least, when I was in my 20s, I was taking such tremendous risks in my 20s. And I used to joke, semi-joke, saying, I'm never going to make it till I'm 30. But I really didn't think I was going to make it till I certainly did not think I was going to make it till I was 50. And I didn't think I was going to make it till I was surprised when I made it till I was 30. And, but you know, it's just something you take these big risks and you just feel invincible. But when you get older, you know, you're just as close to death when you're older as when you're younger. You're always close to death. You know, death is always there. You know, I've lost great friends in their 30s and in their 40s. Not to mention, you know, people who've died in car accidents. But death is always there. You know, not just when you get older. I think you think about it when you get older and you say, oh, there's not as many years ahead of the cart as there were behind it. Well, you don't know how many years were ahead of the cart when you were younger. You just assumed they were there. But if you happen to be like me and living a very reckless lifestyle, you just assumed that, you know, things would be okay. But you never knew. You never worried about how many years were ahead of the cart. When I was 21, I didn't think, oh, you know, I got 10 years left. I didn't think that. I thought, you know, hey, shit happens. But when you get to be older, you're thinking, how many years are, you know, closer than I was before? You are not closer than you were before. You're no closer to death if you're 70 than you are if you're 25. You just don't know. And I think when you accept the fact that you just don't know, you start thinking of yourself a little more younger. You know, you want to take care of yourself. You don't want to just kind of let it go because you figure you're towards the end, because you're not towards the end of the road. You don't know when the road's going to end. Nobody knows when the road is going to end. And I think that's really that obsession. Now, of course, yeah, health things could happen when you get a little older. I mean, of course, you know, you're doing things, but you're taking care of things and you have some more aches and pains and you can't jump as high and run as fast. And I don't know what else you can't do, but it's just a time frame. You know, mentally, I still laugh when I see somebody walk down a hallway with toilet paper on their shoe. Somebody stubs their toe on a sidewalk and drops something. I'm going to laugh. That's just going to happen, you know. So I guess maybe I'm immature, or maybe I'm maturely immature. But I think that if we can hang on to that wonderment of adolescence, if we hang on to that explorative nature, not afraid to ask a question, you know, because we do carry with us, many of us in our lives, you know, the fear of what other people think. Who really cares, you know? And then when it goes back to when you're in organizations, and many people in organizational settings don't want to speak out because they're afraid of what other people would think. And then, you know, inevitably, somebody's going to ask that question. And you're going to think, oh, God, I wish I asked that question. you know, I wish I didn't think anybody would know that. But I guess the point of today's ramble in the basement, as I hear Jungle Jim starting to crank things up, it's really more about our journey and where we are, you know, in it today. You know, and those that decide to hang around and hook their wagons, they hang around. It doesn't matter the frequency, how much you see individuals. As I learned when I ran into these guys who I hadn't seen in years, because it's going to take you right back to that time when you were that close. That bond never breaks, no matter how time or distance or life gets in between that, you know, 1972 and 2021. It's the bond is still there, and they still know you in a way. You know, they know you in a way that others never will. They know you before you were married. They know you before you were married and divorced and married and divorced. They know you before your children. They know you before other individuals stepped into your life. They know the real. And that's a gift. That's a real gift. And as we, you know, are on this journey, it's all a gift. You know, and learning to accept and build, just like in a great improv scene, where you're building on the information that's given to you, and just in life, we're building on the circumstances that are presented to us. And they're not all favorable, but they're all opportunities to build and react to and not negate. Oh my goodness gracious, what I hear you, Jungle Jim is getting ready to tune it up. This is Tim Marr, this is Failing Up. I'm gonna get outside because it's a beautiful afternoon to go over and take a look at the river, maybe get up to the lake, I don't know, but I got to tell you, there's a huge snapping turtle. We have a, going into our lake here, a little pond. I call it a pond. The neighbors call it a lake. I don't know why. I guess that's how you perceive things. It is a pond, by the way. But this huge snapper was going in there. There's no way. You're not supposed to swim in it anyways. There's no way I would just see that snapper. But, you know, fun summertime, dog days of summer. Tim Marr, Failing Up. Have a great week. Look forward to rambling on another day. Bye-bye.